If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome to One to One, an in-depth interview series where I find interesting people from around the world of games to talk to have a proper chat with. Remember, supporters of the Eurogamer website get these episodes early, a couple of weeks before everyone else, and you can find out more about that in the description below or over on the website. I'm Bertie, a long-time writer for Eurogamer, and today on One to One, we're talking horses. More specifically, we're talking about how a huge chunk of games, including the biggest games out there, end up getting their horse representation kind of wrong. And talking to me about this is someone who's been complaining, their own words, about this horse representation for a long time now. Someone who complained so much, in fact, a company eventually hired her to be in charge of a horse project of her own. Welcome, Alice Rupert, to the show.
Welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. I was half hoping you might be talking to me while cantering around on a horse, but I guess you need a microphone, so you can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I could do like a video call from horseback, but that would require a few days' notice in advance, actually. That would be sort of a little bit more complex a setup. I also don't have my own horse, so I would need to get permission from the person whose horses I'm riding, and I'm not sure if they would be on board with me pulling such stuff.
Yeah, maybe not. You could put could you get a computer in the saddlebags? A portable computer, probably a laptop in the saddlebags.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe instead of like a regular desk chair, I could for the next sort of interview, just get like a wooden horse with a saddle on it, something like that. Downside of that is saddles are super expensive. I need to check on it, or like getting a used one.
How much is a saddle? How expensive are they?
Oof, like anything. A good one, a few thousand euros, I suppose. There are cheaper ones for like less than 1,000, but I've never actually bought my own saddle. Like I said, I don't own a horse. I just ride other people's horses.
I was going to ask whether
saddles are notoriously expensive and something you need to take good care of, and also need to take care that they fit well.
Yeah, right. Because there's a lot of leather involved. I can imagine them being quite expensive. Pieces of kit. They're big items that are designed to be quite tough and strong, and but also, you know, quite soft enough so that they move with the horse, I suppose.
Yeah, yes, and to be adjustable enough that they fit the horse.
Yeah. So I've only ever been on a horse once, I think, when I was about 14-ish, maybe slightly younger, and my distinct memory from being up on the horse was I was quite scared. I had no idea. It doesn't seem that scary when you're looking up at a horse from down below, but when you're on the horse, plus I guess your own height on top of it, it's quite high up.
Oh, I think plenty of people also find horses scary from the ground. I've definitely heard that. horses can be really big. I mean, depending on what kind of horse you meet, you see, like they come in a bunch of sizes, right? A pony is a lot less scary than like, I don't know, a 18 hands shire or something. I think finding horses scary is not that rare of an opinion. It's also sort of a healthy respect is also probably wise.
Yeah, right.
There's probably also creatures. People who are not afraid enough of horses.
Yeah, right. So the game you're in charge of is a game called Horse Tales Emerald Valley Ranch. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
And how long have you been in charge of this game for?
So I joined Azir Interactive, the developer behind Horse Tales, in November last year. So November 2021. That was almost a year ago. And before that, I was in touch with Azure already and doing some like freelance consulting work for them. So I've actually, I've known about the project for longer. I've been sort of advising on the project where I could for a bit longer. And I've also been basically very eagerly awaiting the project ever since I first heard of it being made, which was almost 3 years ago now, when I interviewed the then CEO of Azure about it for my complainy horse game website, The Main Quest.
which I've been reading. So were you involved in the kind of the design of this project from scratch, or did you come on a kind of a bit later and you just helped kind of make some things more authentic?
Mostly the latter. So I didn't, I wasn't involved in like the concept phase and the early pre-production yet. At least not, not in a way like I am now. So, my part on the, like my role on the project now is that of creative producer. So I am, really, in charge of like vision keeping, prioritization, also day-to-day project management, planning tasks, planning sprints, all of that stuff. So sort of from the very mundane project management to the sort of overall vision.
Okay.
By the time I joined in that role, much of the core of the project was already decided. So that was not not something that I took a central part in. However, like I said, I was able to have some influence via the consulting before. And one other aspect is that the team at Azure was already familiar with my writing and with The Main Quest. And so some of those like guidelines and common complaints that I voiced for also for previous Azure horse games and for sort of other horse games in general, those were taken into account. So that is sort of like my... My influence and the opinions of my community and like the people whose desires I try to represent, those were taken into account. I was just not, but I wasn't directly in charge of it. There's still definitely also some priorities that I would have set differently if I had been on the project from the beginning, but it's still very much something that I was very, very excited to join because it gets, like it was clear to me from the beginning that this would get a lot of things right and would get a lot of things right that no game had gotten right before, so to say.
Okay. We'll come back to that a little bit. I'll talk more specifically about what's in the game, this game specifically, later. But were you surprised to get a call from them going, do you know what? Do you want to come and work on this game? Because the way I've seen you write about it, well, I mentioned complaining earlier, but these were your words. You kind of announced yourself as the developer who complained so much about horse games that they eventually gave you a job. And I love this origin story. So, but how did it go down? How did it happen? You know, you're that, just sitting there.
I'll admit that was a mild exaggeration for that tweet that went viral. But because what actually happened was it was a lot less was a lot less dramatic and a lot less sudden. Like I said, I started the project, The Main Quest, in 2018, where I was just like, I realized, hey, I want to talk more about horse games and what do games get wrong about horses and what do they get right, of course, which games with horses do I like? What about the niche genre of horse games, which a lot of people aren't aware of, but it definitely exists. It's mostly relegated to like the very kids focused, like edutainment market. What the issues are with the games that are in that market and how they fail to really serve their supposed target audience of horse girls, big quotation marks. So like I said, that's how I started to get into that topic. As part of that process of writing The Main Quest, I would regularly get in touch with people who had made horse games before. And that is what got me in touch with Azure Interactive, because they had made the Windstorm games, which were originally released in 2017 and 2019. So I wrote reviews of the Windstorm games. I think I wrote a review of the first one before I was in touch with the company, and I tore it apart, frankly. I
what was wrong with it? What did you tear it apart for?
First of all, it had the studio didn't have an in-house animator at the time, and it showed the horse did not move very, very well. And it was really a stark discrepancy between the quality of the environment graphics, which is very pretty and like very, very realistic looking environments, and with just a horse that did not look like a horse. And and also some various other issues with the gameplay, like that I just found really weird choices. Now that I have the internal insight, I of course understand better how these choices were made and why, but that also doesn't negate the criticism. I think it's it was also just a very big project for a small team at the time. More details on that in my review on the main quest. It's still up, even though I work for the company now. And then, if I recall correctly, as a result of that, their then CEO got in touch with me offered to provide some insight into how these games were made. And so we had a really nice chat. I made an interview article about that. That's also the first time I heard about what would later become Horse Tales, which is then like using a working title. So that basically gave me a lot of faith in, like, I'm gonna watch what this company does, because they just told me they're working on something super cool. And then basically when I announced that I would be stepping back from my previous job, which was making local multiplayer party games at Air Console, I got contacted by Azure again, like, you know, we're in a phase now where we could use some more input. Do you wanna? And I did wanna. I was very happy to provide input on this very promising horse game that I'd been waiting for news on for like 2 years at that point. And that's how that consulting started. And from there, I was basically already involved. And then at some point, we had the conversation of like, so why don't you join full time? We need a producer, and that went to there. So it was a smoother transition rather than just getting a call out of the blue one day, like, hey, want to make a horse game? but it doesn't stop it being from very exciting. It's still very much a it's a dream job. Of course, it's an incredible opportunity to basically say. Like, basically, I just started out of like passion and stubbornness. I started this project of like, I want better horse games. Why does nobody make them? And de facto, it got me to the point where somebody says, fine, make one. Here's a team. And like, that is amazing. Even though, like I said, it's easy to summarize it very dramatically. The reality was a little less spectacular, but still, like, the outcome is absolutely that.
No, and it's absolutely good to dress it up, you know, in an eye-catching way. But I think it's really nice, this idea that, you know, something that comes from a place of passion will or can sometimes lead to, you know, an unexpected place. You know, you didn't start that your website with that intention, and yet, you know, here you are on the
not
first...
with that intention, but yes, with that hope sort of. I mean, I did. When I started the website, not necessarily with like the specific intention of I want to join a studio, but also it was always sort of also intended as market research, because I quickly, of course, realized, hey, I should make a horse game. I was also working on my own prototype. I had to drop that. But that's also relevant in this whole story, by the way. They didn't just hire someone who wrote about games. I do have a background in, like, I did study game design. I did have a background as a game producer. I was working in that field. So it's... I saw someone summarize my tweet as like, see, hire fans. And I was like, no, that's not what I said. I do have the qualifications for this job.
Yeah,
so it's not just,
Let's talk a bit about that background, because let's kind of rewind a bit, and then we'll kind of forward to kind of where we are now. Sure. And we'll talk a bit about horses in games, because as I realized when I sat down to think about this podcast, there are a lot of horses in games, which might sound like a simple sentence, but when you actually look at it, you're like, oh yeah, that game has a horse who's a pivotal character in the game, not just like a horse. And there are quite a few games like this. So let's rewind a bit to Little Alice. And I know you covered some of this in a Twitter thread nicely, but let's go back over it a bit again. So when did horses first come into your life? And when did you fall in love with them? Because I wonder if there's a moment where you were like, yeah, horses. I'm all about horses.
I think this is actually something that a lot of horse-obsessed people share, is that there's no such moment, because it just always was that way. Like, it's not like most people are exposed to the concept of horses at some point in their life when they're already conscious of thought or anything. I was very much like, I always loved horses. I don't know. I got horse books and horse, I don't know, toys for my birthdays as a kid, when I was super young. I do not remember a time where I wasn't the kid that liked horses. And I also, I remember that when I started taking riding lessons at 8, that was such a highlight. That was like, those summer holidays before I started second grade could not pass fast enough, because I knew that afterwards I would finally start riding horses. And I mean, as a kid, that time scale is always a bit messed up. So it feels like it's a super long wait, but actually it's, I don't know, a few weeks. but that definitely, I don't remember a time where I didn't have a certain fascination for horses. And that fascination has evolved. I do talk about it differently nowadays than I do when I was 8, but I do think that there wasn't really a cause. It's just that, I don't know, they're cool. The way they move is nice. I love looking at them. I think I don't know. I just like horses.
Yeah. So it wasn't that you hadn't necessarily seen a live horse in the flesh. It was something that you picked out of stories, or you just identified with as a kid, and then you were already kind of...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, like when... I think that probably the first times I sat on a horse was like when there was like pony rides for kids at like local town fairs and stuff like that. And I always wanted to go pony riding. It's like, I should ask my mom about this at some point. Because maybe she remembers something I don't, of like, was there a beginning of this? Because I don't remember there being one.
Yeah, and similarly powerful in your life, from what I've read, is gaming. As far as I can tell, you have always played game. That's been a kind of lifelong passion of yours. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. We got into games... or like my sister and I were playing games on my dad's old computers in like Windows 95 and Windows 98 eras, because my dad would always like, during that time, you needed a new business computer with a ton of new features every year or two. So he would just bring the old computers home to us. And we would like play everything we could get our hands on, which wasn't a lot because you're not very resourceful as a kid for that sort of thing. And we didn't have internet, of course. So we would just play every. We started out with a few really cheap demos that we happened to get for our old Windows 95 computer, and then continued with. I think that the biggest thing I played as a kid also with my sister was then like The Sims. So that was like
right.
My first huge time sink was The Sims and all its expansions, which I definitely did spend a lot of time with. And from there we did eventually branch out. Like we also played some Tomb Raider, and then eventually got like a Nintendo 64 with some games on it. So it's always been a part of it. It's always been a part of my life. Yeah, and unlike some other friends my age at the time, I didn't grow out of it. I never felt like I should stop playing games. Like when I was like 10, 12, all of my friends played The Sims, and I think those group of friends then stopped playing completely. Yeah. I now have new friends that play games again.
So did you know at this age, because you said you went on to study game design, did you know then, were the kind of fires burning inside you to follow this as a career, or did you want to be something else entirely?
No, it wasn't always the plan. I actually, like, when I was a teenager, I always thought that I would go study English and be an English teacher. That was like my plan when I was like 15, 16, 17. Then I realized that I had this like moment of like, oh my God, no, I don't like being in school. Why would I want to keep doing this all my life? And then that plan suddenly like died in an instant. I always knew that I liked sort of working creatively. So I was always drawing and writing and, like writing stories and drawing, also drawing a lot of horses, and like going after some other sort of like little projects. And, I was always a bit hesitant to do something like really artistic for a job, because I was like, well, but doesn't that take the joy out of it, sort of? But eventually when I started looking at universities at like 18 years old or something, I started looking at what the local art universities offered. I was looking at like graphic design and animation courses, and then I realized that game design was an option, and at that point it was pretty clear to me, like, that's it. And I realized I read their curriculum, and I realized like character design, narrative, like game narrative, game mechanics, game history, like it sounded almost too good to be true. Like it sounded like, wow, all of those are topics that I find super, super interesting. Are you telling me there's a way to make that my job? And I've never really come away from that. I mean, it's a stressful job. I have enough to do. I'm tired at the end of my work days, but when I look at it from some distance, I still think what I'm doing is super cool.
Yeah. So do you remember, as you're playing games and you're getting a bit older, maybe this happened when you were young, but do you remember the moment where you were playing a game and there's a horse in the game and you thought, something's not right about this horse and it's annoying me, or I want to say something about this? Do you remember this kind of feeling of discontent, if that was the right word, of how horses are represented in games?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the, I already mentioned this moment in another interview recently, but one such moment was when I was playing Assassin's Creed 3. I was a huge Assassin's Creed fan as a teenager. I did Assassin's Creed cosplay on horseback at one point.
Wow.
What I noticed about like the horses in Assassin's Creed is that so you don't have your own horse in that game. You pick up a horse wherever, like there's horses standing by the wayside, and you just pick one if you need one. In Assassin's Creed 3, three of the games before already had horses, but in that one, what was special was that when you you could pick a horse, so there would be like a black horse and a white horse, a chestnut horse, and you could pick one of those, and then you would ride out of town, and then after the loading screen, your horse would have a different color. So imagine the disappointment of like teenage me picking the prettiest horse. And that's saying something. The horses in Assassin's Creed 3 were not particularly pretty. If I look at those today, I'm like, ugh. So picking the one that I liked best, and then the game like takes that choice from me. That's like, why? Why are you doing this? And the other thing, of course, was maybe that was even more of a like more of a moment, because by the time Assassin's Creed 3 came out, that was already after the first Red Dead Redemption, and I of course loved Red Dead Redemption 1. For its horses, like at the time,
right?
I was
Red Dead
by how they looked.
One was good, because I know a lot of effort was spent on Red Dead 2, and this was one of their big things they talked about, was this realism, and particularly their depiction of horses. Clearly, they'd spent a lot of time getting this right, but Red Dead 1 was similarly good in that regard.
I would say for its time, it was fantastic. Yes. I mean, of course, nowadays the horses in Red Dead 1 might not, like, they don't have quite as many mocapped animations and probably fewer polygons and a little bit less detail than the Red Dead 1, Red Dead 2 horses. But in some aspects of their shapes, I would even say I like the Red Dead 1 horses better. Okay. But that's a rare opinion. That's me being extra, I think. I loved the Red Dead 1 horses, and that was, if I recall correctly, in 2010. So when Assassin's Creed announced they're going like frontier, American frontier setting, I was like, oh, maybe that'll be like Red Dead style, and you have a little, maybe you can have like your own horse, and maybe there's even different horses and something like stats or horse taming and something like that. And it didn't have any of that, and I was very disappointed by the lack of horse specific features in Assassin's Creed 3 after having played Red Dead. So yeah, that's definitely one of my defining moments of horse game disappointment.
So that happens, and maybe a switch flicks at that point, and you start looking a bit more purposefully at horses in games, or I don't know, how does that build to a point where you're like, I'm going to write something about this because it's starting to get on my nerves?
I think what was the difference is that for like during that time, like when I was playing those games, I mean, what was that? Assassin's Creed 3 came out when I was 20. So during that time, I always thought that that's just a me thing. Like nobody else cares. So I would have these thoughts and I would make these observations, but I wouldn't necessarily tell them to anyone because my horse friends didn't care about games, and my game friends didn't care about horses, and some of my friends didn't care about it either. So, I didn't really see an intersection for like who would I even talk to about that, and I think what sort of changed was then, yeah, when I just started to talk about more things on Twitter, and I eventually also talked about horses, and I got that feedback from people. But when I criticize specific horses in games, where people would just went like, when people just had the response of, I know nothing about horses, but I love hearing you talk about this. You're so passionate. I'm learning new things. Oh, wow. I didn't know a horse's fetlock joints don't bend that way. and that gave me the encouragement I needed to like, and also, of course, that gave me also the realization that I wasn't actually alone, because another reaction that I got was, oh my God, finally someone else who cares about horses in games. And those two things in combination, people who didn't care about horses but thought it was interesting, and people who had the exact same horse game brain rot as I did, that gave me the motivation to say like, okay, fine, I'm going to start a horse game project. I'm going to do this.
So I want to look at a few different games and their horses, because to me, you know, I can see the difference when there's a horse that is moving in a kind of very believable way. So like, let's say, you know, Red Dead 2, I can appreciate that the horse has a lot of time has been spent getting this horse right, but my mind doesn't know the difference. So The Witcher 3 is a very popular game. And of course, Roach, Geralt's horse, is quite a famous horse at this point. How well does The Witcher 3 do in terms of horse accuracy? How good is Roach in the scheme of things?
All right, so I haven't done an in-depth analysis of Roach where I went, okay. Like, you know, like when I thoroughly review a game, I record individual okay. movements, and I wow. watch them all repeatedly to really like be able to say something, sort of to make a statement on the accuracy of it. I haven't done that for The Witcher, but I have played the game, so that also means that it obviously was there weren't any such glaring mistakes that it would have put me off the game. There's definitely some stuff that I like. For example, I like that Roach is like a character, a named horse, instead of just you find a new horse at every corner. Mm. I like that, for example, The Witcher 3 has like in the Skellige region, there are wild horses that look very much like the Mongolian Przewalski wild horses in terms of their coloring, and they look a bit they look a bit fuzzy, a bit furrier than a regular horse, than the regular horses in the game, which is like this implication that these are horses suited to a cold environment, which is just a detail that I super appreciate. And there's also, there's also the fact that, of course, Roach is like infamously buggy to the point where the developer made an April Fool's joke saying they actually tuned down the accuracy because it was just too good over like an overlay of bug compilations. but that's not stuff that bothers me. I mean, bugs happen. I'm way more happy to have a few bugs in a game, but have like a functionality that fits and like fitting animations and everything. That's more important to me. So I don't care that Roach does push-ups sometimes. That's fine. to elaborate a bit on Witcher 3, I do also think it also squandered some potential, because in the Witcher books, which I'm also a fan of, Geralt has a lot more interaction with his horses, his roaches, because, like, you know, Roach is not just, he names every horse Roach. So I think it would have been an opportunity that Geralt rides a different Roach in Skellige, for example, that rather than just the one that he always has teleporting to him, something like that. And I also think it would have been fun to have, like, I don't know, like Roach in the book. Sometimes Geralt rides a Roach that doesn't listen to him in the books, and he's frustrated by the horse not doing what he said. Like, I think the books very much understand horses, while the games just feature it as a like way of transport. But that's also understandable. I mean, I know this isn't a priority for others.
Yeah. So one game I've seen you talking about recently, arguably one of the games of the year, one of the biggest games of the year, certainly, and that's Elden Ring, and your horse Torrent, although it was kind of a fantasy like interpretation. But I saw you did a post on this about what the ways in which Torrent wasn't quite right. But which are those ways?
So first of all, because that always comes up when I mention Torrent, I know he's a fantasy horse. I know he's half goat. I know he can double jump. That's fine with me. That's I'm not going to point the realism finger at that. I realize, like, just caveat, I know. what bothers me about Torrent is that he has very bendy legs. And it's just a very common issue where horses walk on bent legs, like they walk in a constant squat, and it just looks really stupid. Because horses can't walk on bent forelegs. I have some comparison. This applies to goats too, by the way, so that excuse doesn't even apply. It just looks very wobbly. Like he walks like a spider over uneven ground, and it doesn't give you a very horsey feeling, and not a very goat feeling either. But I also like parts of Torrent. I stuck with Elden Ring for a lot longer than I originally thought I would. Not only because of Torrent, but I definitely also enjoyed that bit. I love that you can feed him raisins, for example. The feeding animations is so cute. Like, that's such a detail. I'm not even sure every player sees that ever, because you can also just heal him with your healing bottles. But it's just one such detail that I think is super, super cute.
Yeah, it's nice that you see both, you know, the good and the bad. I like that you find things to like, even if you're not convinced about overall representation.
I try to be nuanced in that way wherever I can. Like, there's no game horse ever that I would tell you was all good or all bad. They all have their good bits and their bad bits.
So if we look at game horses in, I suppose, the last kind of 5 years in some of the biggest games, and I'm thinking across games like Zelda Breath of the Wild, Epona in that, I'm thinking about Red Dead 2, I'm thinking about Aggro, I think that's how you say it, in Shadow of the Colossus. I can't think of any more off the top of my head. But as we kind of look across games like that, how accurate are the horses we see in these games, generally, roughly?
Hard to make a blanket statement. I think overall, in many ways, they are getting better. Like the graphical fidelity of the Red Dead 2 horses is not something we could have gotten like 10 years ago. But in many, there's also many ways in which they make the same mistakes as they always have. Like, I've been playing after like last time some of my content went a bit outside of my usual audience, I got a ton of people saying like, oh, you should play Ghost of Tsushima, the horse is so good in that. And you definitely need to play it. And I'm not done with the game, so I'm not going to do any like final judgment. And I think people also want me to play the story, which as far as I know also has some horse relevant bits that I'm not trying to get spoiled. But the movement is so bad. It moves so weird. The animation is so strange. And I know it's hard. I know that combining quadrupeds and inverse kinematics is a very complex technical subject. So that's not something that I think is easy to do at all. And I don't blame, I don't know, for example, I don't blame indie game developers for using asset packs that take IK off their hands while getting basic gaits or postures wrong of the horse. But it also just tells me that a lot of people don't know how a horse moves. That's why they keep saying like, this is a really good horse. Like, yes, in some ways it is. Of course, it meets the requirements for what a good horse is for many people. I realize I'm nitpicking. I do understand that a lot of people don't have my sort of quality standard for horses in games. A lot of people don't see what's anatomically wrong with so many digital horses. This happens in animation too, by the way. I've taken screenshots of animated series where I'm just like, where joints bend the wrong way and all that stuff. Like people on the whole do not know how horses work.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I wonder if for many people, I mean, these things should be accurate, but it's interesting that it's slipping by many people, presumably, and that only, you know, people like yourselves, people who ride horses, people who pay attention to horses, are picking up on these things.
Definitely.
So you mentioned that lots of games seem to be making the same kind of mistakes. What are some of those mistakes?
So a few simple ones are like that. For example, I've seen that in several horses. Actually also in some horse games that are actually aimed at this niche audience and still get it wrong, which is just like not representing a horse's gaits properly. So like a horse can walk, it can trot, and it can canter and gallop. And some games just don't let you control which gait you move in, and instead give you like a weird, say if you move the joystick a tiny bit, you walk, and if you move the joystick a lot, you trot, and then you have a button for gallop, for example. And that just always ends up giving me too little control, because I want to be able to walk with my horse, and I don't want it to be like a concentrated effort on the joystick. I also think that's also one of these things that, okay, that's just only the horse people notice that, whatever. But I think what I think is particularly worth noting is that so many games could profit from doing more with their horses. Like, for example, from treating them as characters or as like part of the serious part of the mechanics or the story in some way. I've previously made the example of Shadow of the Colossus, and imagine what a different game that would have been if Wanderer could just pick up a new horse at every corner like you could in Assassin's Creed 3. So I just think it's the games that do use their horses in a narrative capacity, to me, profit enormously from it. Zelda Twilight Princess is another one, like where I really think, and Ocarina of Time as well, of course. I played them in reverse order, which is why I always think of Twilight Princess first. But in Twilight Princess, like the moment where Epona is stolen and the moment where Jack are so like, that's such valuable moments in that game for me. I think more games could benefit from that. And I've written a bit about that, like that dichotomy. Is that the right word? that difference between like horses that are companions, so that are characters in the narrative, and you have one horse and it's your fixed horse and you can't change the horse, versus like collectible horses where you can perhaps get different horses and they have different stats and you can upgrade them, you can tame new ones. So I don't think there's it's not that one of these approaches is better, but there's just a lot of games that get the advantages of neither. by either not giving you any choice and by not implementing anything into the narrative, or sort of by just making the choices meaningless, like that Assassin's Creed 3 example. And I think more like interacting with horses is kind of fun, and a lot more people would enjoy it in games where it's not dangerous and not costly like it is in real life. And I think even something like, I don't know, the popularity of things like, can you pet the dog? Where everyone now knows that if you put a dog in your game, you need to be able to pet it. Horses in games are still not pettable so much of the time. Like, give me interactions with my horses, even if they're simple. Like, let me, I don't know, even, or in games where I like have a home base and return to my home base in the evenings, I want to take off my horse's saddle and like put it away and let my horse relax, because, you know, like if my character can go to sleep, I also want my horse to be able to go to sleep, stuff like that. There's a lot of opportunity. And I realize not everyone is equally bothered by that. But I think a lot of people would actually kind of like it if more games got this right.
Yeah, so you've touched on a couple of things there that you would like to see in games. And I guess I'd like to know your kind of tips. Like, let's say there's a game developer listening to this. They're featuring a horse in their game and they're thinking now, okay, maybe I can make it more of a companion. Okay, maybe I'm going to add some petting options. Are there any other things or any other tips that you would give them, or that you would like to see?
If you're a game developer listening to this and you want to make your horses better, my email is alice@themainquest.com and I'm happy to help. No, I mean, yes, that's serious, but also I have an article on like a listicle of 8 common mistakes that I see people make. One of that is, like I mentioned, those like bendy knees, not like just getting the basic motions wrong. Getting gaits wrong, like not letting me control that I can walk, trot, canter, gallop. Some like, especially in like kids games, we also had the issue a lot of the time that you were not actually able to look at your horse. I think that's super bad too. Horses are pretty, let me look at them. I think in a lot of cases, it really depends on what you want with your game. Like I said, with the companions and collectibles, it's very easy for horses to take up too much space in a game if you let them. Like, for example, if you do mounted combat or something, it gets super complicated super quickly. And as soon as you have like mounted world traversal and traversal on foot, you need to make a lot of consideration of like, okay, that's basically two entirely different game modes and ways for you to interact with the world. That gets complicated. But I think regardless of how much complexity you want in your horse inclusions, there's probably a few simple things that you can make better. Like, even if you only have a scene in your horse game where a horse stands around just idling, there might already be a cool opportunity there to insert some nice little idle behaviors that you don't see a lot. Like it starts with the soundscape as well. Like, horses don't constantly neigh. Like, a horse standing around maybe just snorts a bit, or maybe it scratches its head on its leg or something like that. There's a lot of casual, likable horse things that non-horse people don't see or think about, or that don't come to their minds. And for that, yeah, you do need to ask horse people, and hi, I'm one of them.
So you mentioned this earlier and I wanted to come back to it because I've seen you talking a lot about being a horse girl, and earlier you did it kind of in inverted commas, because it feels like this term is rooted in a kind of sexism to me. I don't know if that's correct entirely, but can you explain it to me? What is this term horse girl, and what does it mean, good or bad?
Yeah, so there's definitely this aspect of like it's definitely very gendered. In my community, we sometimes use the phrase like horse girls of all genders, because we have some guys and some trans men who are like, well, they still fit somewhere under that umbrella, or like they feel like they do in some way, and yeah, absolutely, that's fine. Everyone can be a horse girl. I don't care if you're a dude, you're a horse girl. But on the other hand, like more widely, it's definitely a way of It definitely has negative connotations in a lot of places, like where horse girls are crazy, and you should never be with a horse girl because she's only ever going to care about daddy's money and about her horse, which is also definitely not representative for a lot of people like me who had to save all their birthday and Christmas money for years in order to be able to afford seeing a horse once a week. There's definitely a lot of like negative stereotypes. I don't know. It's always hard to validate. Like, do people get bullied for being horse girls? Yes, I have definitely heard people say that they do. But that also doesn't mean that the term is inherently negative. There's actually an interesting campaign right now from Star Stable Online, which is one of the biggest like actual horse games out there, and they're kind of doing this like a campaign to sort of take that term back and turn it into something positive. And like they did a survey among their players where it's like, yeah, everyone's aware of like the stereotypes of being obsessed and crazy and whatever, but actually the way that riding makes girls feel is more like empowered and brave and good. And so for that term, I would actually forward you to the Star Stable Online campaign on that, because they are definitely tackling that exact thing at the moment, which I think is cool. And I also like, I agree with that. Like, let's I put it in quotation marks because I know that it has these connotations, but yeah, I do call myself a horse girl unironically as well.
I had no idea of all the background surrounding that, because yeah, like, you know, a horse is a big powerful creature. There's nothing kind of girly necessarily about riding a creature like that, so
yeah. No, and by the way, that gendered connotation is also relatively young. So for example, I think what is really interesting, and that's really interesting in looking at horse media, in the past 100 years or so, you had like in the 40s you had the Flicka books and the Black Stallion books by Walter Farley, as well as a bunch of other horse series that all had boy protagonists. And so these were like adventure books for young boys that met horses and that loved their horses and that had special relationship to their horses. And at some point in the last, I would say 40 years or so, that has shifted to like, oh yeah, no, horses are for girls, totally. The point where even modern adaptations of these older books have gender swapped their protagonists. So like the newer Flicka film are like put a girl in the lead role, and the latest Black Beauty film did that too. And the latest, a later Black Stallion movie also decided to put a girl in the main role. And I think that's really, that really showcases very clearly that it's sort of, yeah, horses are marketed to girls these days. They wouldn't need to be. And I also think that applies to horse games, or like horses in games, because I don't think any man enjoyed Red Dead Redemption less because the horses had more features in the second game. I think that gendering is bullshit. I think it's marketing, and it's gendering that only, yeah, it doesn't. It's a marketing strategy, and I don't like it.
Yeah, and rightly so. So let's talk about Horsetails Emerald Valley Ranch, because you talked about being excited by this as someone that's excited about horse games. And you touched on this earlier. There's a whole bunch of games that exist in this horse games category, you know, beside the games that we were talking about earlier. Why were you excited about Horsetails Emerald Valley Ranch? What is this game doing? I mean, now you're obviously working on it, but what is this game doing that people are excited to have in a horse game? What's exciting about this game?
Mm-hmm. I think what I mean at the, like if I summarize the core features, like you have a old downtrodden ranch to restore to its former glory, and you can place buildings there, and you can like you inherit that from your aunt mysteriously, and you get new horses and you ride races. That's all. It's in a way that the premise is fairly standard, but I think the execution of it is all the difference, because there have been a lot of horse games that fit those same basic principles of like you get a farm and you need to build it up again. But as I know from my all of my reviews that I did for the main quest, so I did a lot of market research in this area, as I said, I know that most of these games deal with that topic super, super shallowly. So it's very they're mechanically incredibly simple. And you don't actually have any choice in terms of how you build your farm or what horses you ride, or every horse feels exactly the same. And so some of the features that I'm super, super excited for players to see in Horse Tales Emerald Valley Ranch, are that, so first of all, we have the farm building is actual like building. You find resources and blueprints in the world, and then you come back to your home base and you can place decorations and buildings and place them where they want. You can optimize your farm layout to own as many horses as possible. That just has a lot more gameplay depth than we're usually used to in this type of game. It may not sound spectacular to players players who haven't played these horse games, but trust me, we've been waiting for this. And it's also it's just the world is a lot bigger and a lot prettier than what the competition offers. And one other feature that I'm really excited about is that horses have, I mean, they have different stats. So some of them are faster, some are slower, some jump higher, some have like a charisma value that influences how well you do, how famous you get in races. But they also have traits. So they have personality traits. And what that means is that some horses will prefer certain biomes to others, and some horses will behave differently if you dismount and leave them standing. So like they'll follow you or they'll walk away from you. And they'll also have different preferences for how they like to be pet, and they'll have different preferences for what they like to eat. And all of those things are just really like cool. They just give you a lot more interaction options with the horses, basically, and a lot more, they add a lot more depth, because a lot of times when you play a game in this fashion, it gets old after you did everything once. And I think in our game, because it's very system based at its core, like you have this building system, you have the riding and exploration, of course, and you have the breeding system, which is another very exciting feature, because we actually did a horse breeding system based in real life genetics. So if somebody knows a bit something about horses, you can actually breed for specific combinations. You can breed for horses with the best stats or traits or colors, so you can, or you can combine all of those and have special like breeding projects to aim for. And yeah, because we have these systems, I think it has a lot more gameplay depth, and some people will be busy with it for a long time, even long after they've played through the story missions.
Fantastic. And so when is Horse Tales coming out?
Horse Tales Emerald Valley Ranch will be out on November 3rd for Switch, PC, PS4, and PS5.
Fantastic. And do you have something to move on to after the game is done? Is that already planned out, or are you just focused on the finish line?
It's not anything I can talk about. I can't say that I don't plan on leaving Azir again anytime soon, and I can tell that Azir knows where best, like what type of project to best put me on. So I think that's as cryptic a hint as I'm going to leave.
So we've kind of come to the end here, but I have a few questions that I ask everyone. Sure. And the first of these is, what was your first game? So what was the first game you played? And it can be your literal first game, or it can be the first significant game in your life.
I'm going to stick with The Sims. That's definitely the first significant one. It's not the very first. I played some others before, but it's the first that I spent a lot of time in and that I really got into.
Okay. What was the last game you played? So last game you played, which was the last game you were playing?
I've been on a Stardew Valley binge again recently. It's okay. One of my favorites. It's not the first time I played it, but I did spend a lot of time on Stardew Valley again recently.
How much is a lot of time?
I think I have 250 hours total now, so I must have played like 100 in the past month or two.
Okay. Yeah, that's not too crazy, but that's good.
Yeah, no, I don't. I have a horse game website to run. I can't play video games all day.
And which is your best game, which I suppose can be your favorite game? And I know this is an impossible question, but if you can somehow narrow it down in your head, that's perfect.
Stardew Valley is definitely one of them. Tomb Raider Legend, Outer Wilds, and Subnautica. That's as short a list as I can make.
And there are no horses in those games. Well, the latter two, I don't think.
There is a horse in Stardew Valley, but no, they're not. There aren't any horses in those games. That's just like I focused on my gamer experience right now, and not specifically the horse game experience. I also have like my favorite old horse game is Horse Farm or Minefield, but I can't say like that's definitely also influenced me as a creator, but it's not something I've played again recently or have. I've spent more time with the others.
So what's your favorite horse game? You said your favorite old horse game, but what's your favorite all-time horse game?
That's hard. They all have their issues. I'm going to be very, very cheesy for a second, say Horse Tales Emerald Valley Ranch.
Fair enough.
Of course it's going to be difficult. Of course it's difficult for me to judge, like, because playing it as a creator is something really different, but I genuinely believe that we're doing something really good.
Fantastic. So Alice, thank you so much for being on the podcast again today. I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much.
And to everyone else. Oh, you're welcome. Thank you to everyone listening to this. I'm Bertie. That was One to One, and we will see you next time. Bye for now.